Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I love the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Asbury here, rotoworld.com. That's right, proud to be bringing rotoworld.com back. I'm obviously a big part of NBC Sports, NBC Sports Edge, and Football Night in America. So a lot of my content's gonna be coming out on NBC Sports Edge, including next Wednesday, doing the RotoWorld Draft Guide, 8 p.m. Eastern on Peacock, and the new NFL on NBC YouTube channel. Check it out again next Wednesday at 8 o'clock. It's all part of our RotoWorld Draft Day Marathon. I so wish I could be there with you in Canton at the FF Expo. I know it's going to be a great time, but I am busy working hard this weekend. So for now, what I'm going to do is I want to leave you with a live broadcast, a live broadcast with my guys, with C.D. Carter, right? Denny Carter, Roto Pat, Kyle Dvorak, Pat Crane, and of course... my God, Lord, don't lose Lawrence Jackson. I miss you all. Hope I can be there next year. Have a great conference. Much love.
Welcome to the RotoWorld Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, as Mr. Matthew Berry said, joined by Mr. Denny Carter, also known as Craig, Mr. Kyle Dvorak, also known as Kyle, Patrick Crane, who we call Crane, and Lawrence Jackson at Lord, don't lose, the best Twitter handle of all time. We are live in Canton, Ohio. I always want to say what number state Ohio was, like the 24th state of Ohio, and I should have looked
that up. That sounds right. Yeah, I think it should be. Right. It's around 20.
Should have looked that up on Wikipedia before the show. And we're so happy to be here live. We're going to be taking audience questions today. We'd be remiss if we did not remind you about RotoWorld Draft Day, Wednesday, August 17th. Maybe tomorrow if you're listening to this via audio. Starting at 9 a.m. Eastern on our new YouTube channel, NFL and NBC, youtube.com/NFL and NBC. It's going to be an all-day draft marathon. We're going to have several mock drafts, a best ball mock draft, a super flex mock draft, two episodes of the podcast, two Q&As, a YouTube video of Denny and I.
Sorry in advance, but that'll be included.
Galaxy Brains. We're tapping into the zeitgeist with that one.
It's where we think a little too hard about football happenings and what
Denny,
they might mean.
Speaking of tapping into the zeitgeist, bad quarterback play. Zach Wilson this weekend, and then you, Denny, at the flag football tournament here at the Canton, the Fantasy Football Expo, where I'm going to read off your stats real quick.
Go ahead.
0 of 1 for 0 yards, 0 touchdowns, and 1 interception.
That's technically correct. If you watch the game, which I always encourage people to do, if you watch the game, you'll see that I actually found you down the sideline wide open.
I was streaking wide open.
Streaking wide open, and honestly, didn't make much of an effort to come back to the ball. So I don't know if that's on me, but I guess I will take the brunt of it.
Well, what was the original play call?
The original play, and we talked about it a lot before the game, was for Lawrence to come underneath and for me just to check down. But when I looked at him, he has two guys on him. I'm not going to throw. And I apologize, honestly, in retrospect. I should have just checked down to you and let you do your thing. But
that was a touchdown.
So we wanted to get Lawrence the ball in space. Instead, the team we were playing, what team were Trophy Smack, They had Kyle Hamilton at free safety, and he closed in
well,
real hard.
And that's something I didn't anticipate was them playing two deep safeties. I didn't know we were doing that in flag football.
The book was out on Denny. Denny has a bit of an arm. Like we try to like you know make it a meme that Denny's not an athlete, but unfortunately he kind of is.
Yeah, and that guy was deep. That guy's 40 yards off the line of scrimmage, and who would have known? Who would have known?
So yeah, Denny did not complete the pass. We were out of the tournament in two plays.
Two plays, because I got burned by Wes Welker afterward. A Wes Welker lookalike.
So we didn't make you proud, but we will make you proud with this show. We hope to make the audience proud by answering their questions. They were here to take any and all questions. I see, except from the one man wearing the CBGB shirt, Mr. Bob Harris. He's disqualified. Actually, no, ask questions of Bob. But yeah, any questions? We're here for an hour, so we're here.
We got a question here.
Yeah. So the question is, how do we like sort fact from fiction, kind of in the preseason? Like, what is real? What do you play stock in? What do you not play stock in? And I'm going to let the analysts here talk in just a second. But I'll say it's become harder than ever because the preseason used to have a very set rhythm where starters play a little bit in the first two games, then the starters would play two or three quarters in the third game. You get a look at like the real live first team offense. And like some teams, with only three preseason games now, like teams are just approaching it totally different. Like there's no like consensus on what even is like the starters game anymore. A lot of teams no longer even have the starters game. So Patrick Crane, you look like you might have thoughts, and hopefully that's a thoughts space. How do you sort of back from fiction in the preseason?
I think the biggest thing is, and the market's done a much better job over the last couple of years of factoring this in, is who's playing with the starting quarterback, you know, the first team, who's getting the snaps. The snaps is going to tell you a lot more than the performances in most cases because we care about who's actually going to be on the field come week one. But at the same time, like, week one is not everything. So there, you don't want to completely lose sight of, you know, if you've got a rookie who is maybe not playing a ton with the first team, like Garrett Wilson didn't have a ton of snaps with the first team in the preseason. I don't think that's necessarily in the world. We're looking at those types of guys coming on as the season progresses. So, but I do think, like, camp battles and stuff with veterans, there's a lot to glean from just the snaps.
Like, Corrine, one thing I've noticed is, like, in, like, the new preseason, like, the negative information a lot of times is more real than the positive information. Like, so, like, say the Titans this week, who created, like, a lot of negative information for fantasy managers. Like, when Treylon Burks is playing into the fourth quarter, like, that's obviously very notable because he's clearly not with the first team offense, and they clearly think he's nowhere close to being like a big time contributor in week one. Like, that's something like that's a data point. Like, wow, like this is a problem. Whereas like we don't get nearly as much positive information because a lot of times the positive information is this guy's not playing, so they're putting him in bubble wrap, and that's also kind of one of the takeaways from the new preseason. I feel like.
Yeah, I think it's like that tells you if you're drafting him in the seventh round, expecting him to be a week one contributor for you. He probably will not be. But at the same time, if that then gets priced in, which I expect it will be, and he drops to like the ninth or tenth, it's a little bit of a different value because if he starts scoring in week eight at that value and then he ends up being a star, it's a smash.
Well, what for Bob Harris, what's your question? Come on, just get out of the way. Come on. So the question is, how do you evaluate coaching in the preseason and like are we kind of maybe plays into, like, can you assume rational coaching? Which you can't. So the question, by the way, from Bob Harris at Football Diehards, one of the best people on Twitter. We love Bob. But who's got some thoughts on this? Denny?
The question.
What do you read into with preseason coaching?
Right, like, right.
Who can we trust? Maybe who can we trust? What kind of coaching decisions can you trust in the like, what can you read into, like, so-and-so is using so-and-so like this, that might actually
right.
be applicable to the regular season.
I think as important as that is, it's also important to listen to coaches during training camp and during the preseason and to take what they say somewhat seriously. I mean, there's always going to be Kyle Shanahan's who, you know, trick us into oblivion every year with the backfield. But it is something. I talked about this on the Good Football Show, or not Roto-World football podcast the other day, where
the lawyers most of the crowd is actually NBC lawyers.
I had right.
They're upset.
I'm uncomfortable now, but yeah, and to really, I've tried to pay more attention to what coaches are saying about players this offseason instead of just relying entirely on my evaluation of a player or a team or that player's situation on that team, his fantasy environment. So I try to blend those a little bit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's like a coach by coach, on a coach by coach basis. Like Denny said, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, they just gonna say anything. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't care about our fantasy teams. But when you got a guy like Andy Reid, and you see him putting Sky Moore, using him in the backfield, trying to get him the ball each and every way, like you consider that. You know, so it just depends on the coach, his history, what he's done with players, especially when we're talking about rookies, because we all love the rookies. When they get in there, we want to see the top rookies and how they're being used. So, it's really just a coach-by-coach basis. But then you get a guy like you get a generational talent like Kyle Pitts, who I think we all going to know regardless how he's going to, you know, be used in such fashion. So, yeah, it just depends who the coach is and what their history is with the media. Bill Belichick will outright tell you, fantasy football means nothing to me. So there you go. So you don't have to worry. For him, you have to actually wait till we get to the field. So, yeah, just try to know the coaches, and then you couple that with, you know, what we see in our evaluations, and then we go from there.
Yeah, as Denny and Lawrence have highlighted, like, some coaches – so there's kind of like this perception, like you can never trust anything a coach or a GM says. Like, oh, he's just lying. Like, clearly that's just a lie. And that is more like colored by like a few coaches where like Pete Carroll, like you could tear your ACL and Pete Carroll like 2 weeks later, like he's ahead of schedule. Like he's probably going to be ready to play in like a month. And like, oh, I probably don't believe that. Sean Payton was really, really bad. Like maybe the most opaque coach in the NFL. And Kyle Shanahan's infamous. But most of these guys are like bad liars. And like,
they don't even try. Yeah. I find that so interesting, the mindset of a lot of coaches. I think to get to such a high level of almost any profession, you have to kind of have a big ego, especially in a very, like football is a very just outwardly like aggressive, violent sport. So to be a leader of these all, very athletic men, you have to have an ego that makes you want to talk about your team and about yourself and your strategy a surprising amount, because coaches should probably lie more all the time, in fact, as a strategic measure. But a lot of them are pretty open, more open than strategically you would want to be. So there are outliers, and I think those ones color our perception of them. But a lot of coaches just love to talk.
Yeah, they kind of wear their emotions on their sleeves. Like, it's very clear, like, when Mike Vrabel, like, doesn't like a player, like, ooh, wow, yeah, not drafting him anymore. I think we took the meme too far, like, never believe coach. Like, a lot of they will just, like, well, we weren't kidding. Kendrick Bourne is trying to make him Debo Samuel. That's interesting. Not all coaches.
With Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Memorial Day savings for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch. 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, it doesn't change much except for making our lives better. Because we were talking about this in the opening panel. Like, the Matthew Berry boat. It's going to be, what's the thing? The rising tide. It's going to lift all the NBC boats.
Lift the boats.
NBC, you know, pretty committed to fantasy already amongst like the major media companies, one of the most committed. But obviously they're more committed than they've ever been. Mm-hmm. We're bringing in the biggest name in the industry. They're putting him on Sunday Night Football. So we're gonna be working with him. We're gonna be interacting with him on his preview show on Sundays, on his live show on Peacock. But also, so we'll be working together. But it's kind of all, we're still gonna be doing our thing on the Roto World Football Show. Like, we're not breaking up the band, so to speak. And so we're still gonna be all of our same great content. And just Matthew being around, being Matthew, being the goat is a. Kyle said to say the goat.
Yeah, you the kid got it in the... It doesn't sound right coming out of your mouth. You used it in a correct fashion, but when you say it, it doesn't sound great.
It sounds awful.
It's not good. It's not good. But, like, he's got a lot of followers. And if you're listening to this and you follow him, I don't
maybe shoot us a follow.
You should shoot us a follow. But it is pretty wild how mainstream he makes fantasy, like... You know, the fact that, like, my grandma can be like, I saw that guy on ESPN or whatever, I saw him on NBC now, is insane for a fantasy person.
Yeah, so because,
like, we don't deserve that amount of clout, and somehow we got it.
I would say Barry being on the field for the Hall of Fame game is a big moment for fantasy football in general. Like, I think a lot of us who have been in the industry for a while saw that, and we're like, oh, it's happening. Like, we got someone. We've infiltrated onto the field.
He was also the first fantasy analyst to ever touch a football field.
It's true. And then we did, and you saw what happened.
Well, I was to say, you could question whether it was a good decision by NBC. I mean, I'm a company man, but they put a fantasy guy on the field, Matthew Berry. That's great. And then a week later, we're like, well, the barrier's been broken. A fantasy guy's on the
field
in Canton, Ohio, and then Denny comes.
And then
the
I messed it up. What can you do?
Man, it was not good.
The pregame analysis of how Jalen Hurts is going to do specifically for fantasy, which we know a ton of people are watching for that exact information. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a huge deal for us. All your, you know, the NBC fantasy analysts you know and love, but it's just a huge deal for the industry too.
You
and
said
even ones you don't like.
You said the band's not breaking up. Correction, the boy band. We're the boy band. And secondly. Matthew Berry just came to NBC to ride my coattails. So, and I said I let him. I said it's cool. I said, hey, look, I said, Matthew, stick with me. We going places, baby.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that. I've written a handwritten note to Matthew Berry asking for one retweet. So I'm hoping that comes through.
Do you get to choose which? Can you say, I want you to do this one?
Or no, literally anyone, Matthew, if you're listening.
And I'll just be honest with you, that's going to be tied up for months, if not years, in NBC legal. So.
Oh, well.
Who has our next question?
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
So the general gist of the question, how do we evaluate new offensive coordinators? Are there some where we might be more primed to wait for more information, some where we might be primed to pounce earlier? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, I think the Giants are an interesting one because there's been a number of shakeups. We've got you know, Wandale Robinson coming in, trying to figure out what his role is going to be.
The only player who matters in fantasy anymore. Yeah.
And I think in some cases, like, we get a little tied to what happened in the past. We get tied to, like, the name brand value. But I think in situations like that, it can be quite fluid. Like, I'm pretty nervous about Kenny Galladay. You know, it's like it's a new coaching staff. Like, he reportedly is not having a very good training camp. Like, I don't think it's impossible that we see some Colin Johnson mixing in with Kenny Galladay. Where,
that's
like,
disgusting. I can't believe you'd say such a
thing. I think, like, that type of shakeup when you have a new coaching staff is at least way more on the table than it would be with the same coaching staff with the guys built rapport. So I do think that's something to consider.
Yeah, and I think it depends what you are looking for from the coaching staff. Going back to the Giants, because I've drafted a lot of Giants in my day. Weird for me, at least. I don't know if like he can make Daniel Jones do the Josh Allen leap. In fact, I almost know he can't because that's such a rare thing to happen. Really,
he can't. No,
no, you don't think no.
Bill Walsh would be like, yeah, I'm retiring.
But what I really just want to see, or the thesis of the Giants, is that we've seen the Bills previously have one of the highest pass rates over expectation in the league, and if we come out and see like back-to-back first and 10, second and 9 runs, I feel like I've made the wrong bet. This isn't what I wanted, and it's not going to go well. So I would react strongly. I mean, you know, it's one or two runs, but if they are playing philosophically like the Bills are, my bet is paying off, and I'll hold on to those players if they're not doing well. If he goes out and they're not playing stylistically comparable to the Bills, I was wrong. My evaluation of how that team would operate will be wrong, and I'd react strongly quickly. So it depends on, like, what the win condition of the bets you're making are.
Yeah, Kyle, you have a series on the site of what if, right?
What if Daniel Jones is good? What if Giants are good?
What if the Eagles pass more, right?
Yeah, that's another one.
I highly recommend checking it out because it's like trying to get ahead of what we could know by week one. You know, by week one, okay, Eagles are going to be more pass heavy. Got it. But if you're ahead of that, then you're hammering A.J. Brown at his ADP. Then you're getting Dallas Goedert at his ADP. So Kyle's done a great job with that.
Yeah, and that's like another perfect example of not a coordinator question necessarily, but how is a team going to call their plays? I mean, the team that trades for A.J. Brown and pays him like $100 million, I would expect them to throw a lot more. That's also the team that ran an absurd rate down the stretch last year. So we should get a decent idea early in the season of which version of the Eagles we're going to see. If they're down 14 and still run the football in week one, I'm not going to feel good about my A.J. Brown teams.
No. This is another thing that's like become more difficult over the years, I think, because you know we're seeing in some best ball drafts Justin Jefferson now going ahead of Cooper Kupp. And that's very much because of the offensive coordinator change. Like that's like, you know, maybe completely because of the offensive coordinator change, because we know we're going to get more passing in Minnesota. We know we're going to get more creative routes for Jefferson than trying to scheme him so he's trying to get open against linebackers and stuff like we saw with Kupp last year. But it does become... Now you have a much more difficult decision to make because it's like, are we over-baking in that offensive coordinator? Because we don't know for a fact that it's going to work like that.
Staying on the Vikings, I think that's a good example as well. You mentioned how Justin Jefferson's getting drafted ahead of Cooper Kupp now. So with that offensive coordinator coming in, people feel like, oh, no, now it's pass happy. So we gotta give Dalvin the bump down the wrong way. You also got to look at the talent, too. Now he has Dalvin Cook at running back. He didn't have that. You're not just going to stop throwing the ball to a running back who's known to catch the ball out of the backfield. So you got to take that into consideration as well. They're not going to run the exact same scheme, the same plays, because they don't have the same players. You know, so, yeah, it'll be more creative route running to get their playmaker, their best guy, Justin Jefferson, open. But you still got Dalvin Cook there, who's a top five back in the league. So everything rolls into that, too.
Yeah, Lawrence and Kyle kind of, like, hit it on the head, I think, where it does boil down to, if you're, like, putting percentages on it, it's probably still more about the personnel they have than the scheme they're coming from. I mean, there's how many times have we seen... like 9 out of 10 head coaching hires are like offensive coordinators coming from a hot scheme who just like immediately face plant because they either don't have the personnel or try to like square peg or round hole with the personnel, and you have to really kind of probably overweight.
Matt Nagy.
I was gonna say it's the Sam Darnold paradox. He just needs one more offensive coordinator. Get him one more, the right one, and there's only so much you can do to fix that guy, as we found out time and time again.
So very good question. Next question. The question's about injury optimism, which should be one of the biggest topics every summer, really, like, because it's just like an annual tradition, having too much injury optimism, and how to bake that into your draft decisions. In the specific case of Matthew Stafford, which is kind of like weird, uncharted territories. He's not like coming off like an injury from last year. It's not like he's coming off from a torn ACL. He's coming off an injury that like I guess he was listed with an elbow last year. Yeah. It's kind of like a new injury. We haven't seen how the Rams have handled it in the past. And you know, who's got some initial thoughts here on injury optimism?
You remember last offseason when because the Cowboys was on the last Hard Knocks, right? And it was looking real murky for Dak Prescott in the shoulder. And it was like people was really nervous about that. Like, is he going to be ready for week one? if you're going into these drafts, man, like we don't know what's gonna happen. Like, they made it seem like Dak Prescott was gonna miss 6 weeks, and then he's there week one and he threw the ball 50 times, and his shoulder was hurt, you know. So obviously a guy like Matthew Stafford, elbow, well, that's attached to your arm, so that's important at quarterback. It's about, like, just waiting it out, man, just letting the process take place. As of today, we still relatively early in a redraft season, you know, so you hope that as we get to closer to the regular season, we start to get more answers, and then when we're drafting at that time, we have more clarity, and then we could make those moves. But I would say, yeah, Matthew Stafford affects those guys a lot.
Yeah, with the Stafford stuff, it definitely makes me more nervous about some of the Rams' ancillary pieces, because one thing you could see happening is Stafford plays the whole season, but he plays through pain. And so, you know, that could potentially lead to some more errant throws, the Rams not trusting him as much to, you know, kind of have the whole offense going through him, which would lead to more runs. And so you just have, like, the Rams kind of shifting towards the run, as they did at the end of the regular season last year, which would then hurt kind of the non-Cup pieces, I think, probably more, because the offense is probably still going to run through Cup, even if it's a bit more run-heavy than they would prefer it to be.
Yeah, I mean, we're only a year removed from Sean McVay shifting to a pretty dramatically run-heavy approach for, I don't know, the last 4 to 6 weeks of the regular season. I don't know if they were spooked over Stafford's picks for touchdowns.
The three-interception game in particular, like, yeah, threw the car in reverse, basically.
With a pick six, I think, as well.
And I don't know if Stafford's injuries played into that, but we saw that McVay is ready and willing to shift that offensive philosophy, which obviously could be big for someone like Cam Akers. But the elbow thing for Stafford, I think is concerning. I mean, he's not going to throw until a week before they're not going to ramp him up to 100% until a week before the season. And so you're looking at Cooper Kupp with a third pick overall, fourth pick or whatever, and you're, can I do this? Like, do I still feel comfortable? Because without Stafford, like you mentioned, it's a train wreck. It's John Walford, who's mostly just a rushing quarterback.
Who did beat the Arizona Cardinals.
Have we seen him and Taylor Heineke in the same room?
Possibly. But, yeah, and so you see Allen Robinson later, and you go, I don't know, maybe I'll just hedge a little bit. It does play a factor.
Well, the question is about how do we take into account, like, kind of, it seemed like increasingly crazy, like, injury return timelines, like, guys kind of, like, breaking the model. And I think, though, with those, those are still the exception, as we're seeing, like, with J.K. Dobbins just got cleared to do individual drills, like, a week ago. And so, like, I think we're getting more outliers than we used to, but, like, the baseline is still usually, like, 10 to 12 months with any, like, Achilles or ACL. Achilles is a little quicker. Michael Crabtree was kind of the beginning of that. Like, Michael Crabtree came. There's been more six-month, and Demaryius Thomas did that too. There's been more six-month Achilles returns, so you kind of bake it in that you no longer have to assume if a guy gets hurt in, like, November, he's not going to be ready for week one or whatever. You also need to, like, it's like, I think everyone saw J.K. Dobbins be, like, full go for camp, like, didn't even have to worry, like, no one even, like considered his injury in, like, best ball drafts in, like, April or May. Right. We're still seeing, I mean, he's probably going to be ready for week one, but does anyone else have any thoughts on this?
Well, J.K. Dobbins got on Twitter and told us he was going to be ready for week, so once he, and he hadn't been on Twitter for months, but he got on there to let us know he was going to be ready for week one, and it looks like he will be. But you mentioned the word outlier. It's almost like the outliers aren't even outliers no more. It's like everyone's coming back from the injury like a month shorter now, it seems like. So, you know, it's the sooner they come back, the better they can, the better they can be for us. And, you know, that's what we all love about fantasy. So, man, it's like...
So the question, do we worry that the guys, even who do get back, have diminished production on the field, like, say, Cam Akers?
Yeah. That's what I was going to bring up, who, you know, he averaged 2.5 yards per carry in the playoffs. It wasn't good. But then when you really get down to it, none of the running backs did good in those playoffs. So then you have to consider that as well. Like, Sony Michel, He averaged 2 yards a carry. Daryl Henderson came back from injury. He averaged 2 yards a carry. They were facing some of the they faced three of the top seven rush defenses during that playoff run. So if it was only Cam Akers, it would be easier to determine. But since you have all those other factors, then you say, well, he did come back. So maybe further removed from the injury coming into this season, you have more optimism.
I do think in general you still have to like bake in an injury penalty, because the way Adrian Peterson came back, like Jamal Charles did the same thing, they came back like roaring after those still just feel like the exception, and it seems like very, very frequently. I think it's still worth kind of baking in an injury penalty.
Well, I mean, Cooper Kupp's big season was like 2 years after he tore his ACL, right? Like the first year he came back, he wasn't what he was last year. So I think, yeah, you do want to bake in an injury penalty, and you'll see some ADPs really reflect that injury penalty and some don't. So I think just kind of player by player, like Jameson Williams was going, I think, pretty high given when he tore his ACL so late, chances of him playing. Now we've heard, you know, he might not play till November. So with some guys, I think sometimes there's more optimism than with other guys who are dealing with the same injury.
Joe Burrow comes to mind last year. I think the assumption was he'd be 100% back week one, and whether he was or not, the Bengals didn't really treat him as such. It wasn't until after midseason that they let him, you know, let cut him loose, and therefore, you know, the whole passing attack in Cincinnati. But that assumption was wrong. Like Joe Burrow, they were not going to act like Joe Burrow was 100% in week one.
I mean, that's another thing with the injury, too. Even if they do get back, a lot of times they're treated differently. Mm-hmm. Which is what I found interesting about Cam Akers for a while. I was really optimistic because, like, Cam got to even though he was ineffective, he got to regain trust in his knee in the most important games of his career. So I thought, you know, like, this offseason would be like all systems go for Cam, but instead it has been the exact opposite. And all of a sudden Sean McVay remembers that he likes Daryl Henderson again. Where last year, he was like, this Daryl Henderson doesn't really stay healthy. Like, I'm not a big fan.
We're gonna need literally anybody else besides Daryl.
Nice. Speaking of injuries,
we're trading Sonny Michel. I mean, like, we're trading for Sonny Michel. It's kind of crazy. The question is, are any of us going to take Ramondre Stevenson over Damian Harris?
I wonder who's gonna grab this microphone
Crane has stolen the microphone from Lawrence Jackson.
The question should really be, have we been taking Ramondre Stevenson over Damian Harris? And the answer to that is yes, I have been doing that.
I think I did this last night, because I have, you know, we're here working, but I still have basketball teams on slow drafts. I've become a slow draft bro. I think I did this for the first time last night. The profile, like, you know, Crane, you wrote this great article about running backs with, like, league-winning profiles, and this, like, Ramondre has the skill set of the league-winner type. Do I think he achieves it very often? No, because Damian Harris is good. Like, I think there are most times in the universe that this season plays out, Damian Harris probably outscores him, right? But the times when Ramondre outscores Damian Harris, I think, could be massive.
Yeah, and I think, you know, do you have the true sickness where you're actually thinking about this in terms of where the market's going to be in a month and it's June? Because if you do, you know, you could kind of see the drumbeat on Ramondre Stevenson, you know, had been really strong, that he's potentially, like the beats are saying, he could be their starting running back, and he catches passes whereas Damian Harris does not. So if you start to see that, you know, okay, the market's going to trend this way with the ADP, then I want to be ahead of that. And I feel like now the ADPs are basically, I mean, they're right back to back. And I think Ramondre probably will ultimately go ahead. So I'll be taking a lot of Damian Harris probably as he slips.
It's a different rushing system, first of all, in New England post Josh McDaniels. And I don't know if that system, which is supposed to kind of shade toward Shanahan territory, I don't know if that system's great for Damian Harris. In fact, I would go on a limb and say it's not. Like, that the straight ahead running style that Josh McDaniels has used in New England was great for Damian Harris. I don't know if he fits there. Also, Stevenson last year on very limited pass catching opportunities was very efficient, and that carried over from his college career where he did a lot with a little in the passing game. I'm taking Stevenson over Harris.
And he's big. He can get used at the goal line. Yeah. He's got that profile where he can do everything, all the high-value touches.
I wouldn't say I'm necessarily taking Ramondre Stevenson over Damian Harris, but I am not ever drafting Damian Harris and quite frequently drafting Ramondre Stevenson. So Fortunately, we only have time for two more questions. We have one in the front. What is it? So the question is our thoughts on Aaron Jones, like the targets void for the Packers and Aaron Jones' splits in the past without Devontae Adams. But also, this wasn't in the question, kind of like every year, like why there's no reason for Aaron Jones not to catch 60 or 70 passes this year. And then he never quite does. But so what are our thoughts on Aaron Jones post Devontae Adams?
Well, for me, and now he's going in the second round, I kind of feel bad that he's not in my top 12 running backs. But, hey, you get Aaron Jones in the second round, they want to use A.J. Dillon a little more. That's not necessarily, to me, a negative because of the reason you're high on him in the first place. We hope to see more work in the receiving game, and we know he's an efficient player. He does a lot with his touches. I think involving A.J. Dillon more could be what will help Aaron Jones. So, you know, you'll see him in the slide. You know, when the Green Bay Packers get near the goal line, like Aaron Rodgers is picking and choosing who he wanted to get them touchdowns. And Aaron Jones is his guy. So you got every reason to be high on him going into this season.
Aaron Jones has been tough for me because he typically goes right next to Saquon Barkley. And Barkley, it's so much easier to see how he has just an absurd snap workload, getting all the touches out of the backfield. He's a younger player. Aaron Jones turns 28 in December, which, you know, makes you a little bit nervous. But I think once Saquon kind of moves up to the 1-2 turn, which is, I think, where he'll ultimately settle, then Aaron Jones becomes a little bit easier. You know, you don't have that choice to make anymore. And, yeah, I think if Rodgers does not have receivers that he trusts, he will check down. I mean, people have criticized Rodgers for checking down too much. I don't think he will have a problem checking down to a guy he trusts in Aaron Jones. He could set a career high in receptions.
Real quick, how many is he going to catch, Pat? What's your projection for Aaron Jones? Is it 75? Are you going to man up and say 75?
Let's go 76.
There you go. 76 catches for Aaron Jones in 2022. We have time for one more question. Yes, sir. Talking about one of the hot button players in fantasy, this is worth no receiver competition and a new quarterback in Matt Ryan. Where are we on Michael Pittman this year in fantasy?
Afraid, because he's going a little bit too early for where I want to take him, but I really don't have a strong argument against him. So it's just like one of those situations where in the past I feel like I've been caught out a little bit because I'm like, this guy's really, I think, maybe more of a late third round value and got to take him in the early third. But ultimately, it's pretty easy to imagine him being kind of Matt Ryan's Calvin Ridley in that offense. And I think that's a smart coaching staff. I don't think they want to be as run heavy as they were at the end of last year. They were doing that, I think, to protect the team against Carson Wentz. And if Matt Ryan isn't a quarterback upgrade, which I think he will be, that could be a really big deal for the way they're approaching the offense of being a little bit more pass first.
I think I bought all in on Michael Pittman. And early in the summer, I was a little hesitant. Like, yeah, like, wow, I'm not sure if Michael Pittman should be sometimes going in like as a top 10 receiver. But because, you know, sometimes it can be bad, of course, when you're the only show in town. As we saw with, like, T.J. Hockenson, he's kind of a bad example because he's a tight end. He's not as explosive a playmaker as Michael Pittman. But when defenses can key all their attention on you, I mean, it doesn't matter if you have no target competition. But Michael Pittman's kind of famously a man, like, beats man coverage. And with Matt Ryan, you know, sometimes when you think of Matt Ryan as a quarterback, like, the easy narrative is, like, Matt Ryan barely threw any touchdowns to Kyle Pitts last year. Didn't ever throw touchdowns to Julio Jones. He's afraid to make those tight window throws in the most important parts of the field. But, you know, going back to Roddy White, I mean, Matt Ryan has supported so many wide receiver one campaigns.
Roddy White, that's my boy right there.
Like, he's quite frequently supported two wide receiver ones and is a guy who we know can produce wide receiver one seasons.
The last thing on Pittman, there was that report, I think, yesterday where Frank Reich said, look, the elite teams in this league do not do ground and pound. We know that. We don't want to do that. Now, with a viable starting quarterback in Matt Ryan, maybe they can do that. So we talked about the what-if scenarios. What if the Giants are good? What if the Eagles pass more? What if the Colts are a pass-heavy team? Like, that changes your view of Pittman. It changes your view of Jonathan Taylor, of whoever's playing tight end, Mo Alley-Cox, you know, whoever. And so if you take that into account, I think, at least for me, that possibility makes Pittman a very appealing target in redraft.
Yeah, and if you think, like, you know, I, like I said, Pittman is someone I struggled with a little bit. I'm not as high as some others, but one thing I try to think through is, could he be going at like the 202 in drafts next year? And I think he could. So, you know.
So, yeah, as we turn off Denny's mic, this is when I mentioned Denny has replaced Jonathan Taylor at 1-1 with Michael Pittman, actually. And Nyheim Hines is Denny's 1-2.
That's right. So, that's right.
Thank you so much for participating today. Thank you so much for the amazing questions. Thank you for listening. If you were listening to this in podcast form, and please, please check out our draft day marathon on Wednesday, August 17th. Again, all the mock drafts, all the Q&As, all the YouTube content with Denny and I for some reason. So thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you so much for listening.